Good morning. Welcome to another briefing of ICA, the Institute for Contemporary Affairs, in the framework of the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. We have a very special guest today, Major General Yoav Gallant, who has a very fascinating CV that I'm looking at right now. I'm just going to mention a few things. The reason why he's here is his current capacity, which is the operational commander for the Israeli IDF Southern Command. But for years, he's held senior positions in the IDF. And among the most noteworthy that I would like to share with you, of course, is his previous position as the military secretary to the Prime Minister, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, which put him in a position to be in the Prime Minister's many contacts around the world on foreign and defense affairs. And previous to that, among the many positions he had, he was the commander of the Israeli naval commandos, what's known in Hebrew as Shayetet Shlosh Esrei. And obviously in an era in which counterinsurgency warfare and counterterrorism are becoming more and more critical for the national security of countries, that kind of experience is extremely important for the security of Israel and indeed the security of our entire Western alliance. So with that said, let me turn over the floor to General Gallant.
Good morning. First of all, I have to apologize for my poor English. It has been a long time since I spoke English, and I'll try to do my best. And if you have any questions about pronunciation, please let me know. And I look at this meeting as an opportunity to describe professionally the situation in the Southern Command, especially with the focus on the Palestinian issue and the terror issue in Gaza Strip. It will take me, I think, about 30 minutes, and then we can have some questions. The purpose of Southern Command is shown on the board, and is to defend the sovereignty and the borders of Israel in the south, and to protect the lives of its civilians. We see five major tasks. First of all, is to the plan and the command, the campaign, in case of emergency in the south, to combat terror infrastructure, as it's shown on the point two, to deter the enemy and to provide early warning, as it's expected from our major tasks, to command the permanent and allocated forces in the south, and the fifth one is not exactly a military issue, but we think that we have to reinforce and develop the southern Israel and the Negev area as part of a national mission. The army is there and is have an important role in the south. What do we see in the arena, looking backward for couple of years, and this is a map of terror acts in the southern arena vis-a-vis the Israeli borders in the south, and you see only major events that all of you heard about them in the past, and in red you see that Eilat was a taking, not the first time but the first succeeding time during the last years, and what I try to show here is that global terror and the Islamic Jihad the action in the arena is acting against all the neighbor countries in the area, including Israel. And this is, of course, a common interest of all of us to try to avoid it. the routes are from many countries around us. That doesn't mean that the governments cooperate with it. The opposite is right. We try to avoid it, but threats are starting in many areas around Israel, and most of them, and I'll talk about it, are find a terminal in Sinai Desert, and from Sinai Desert infiltrate into Gaza Strip, both sides. What is the general overview of Gaza Strip? First of all, there is a basic parity between Israeli interest and Palestinian interest. The Israeli want security, the Palestinian want a country. And this is not exactly the same all the time. The basic factors in Gaza Strip, population, territory, and resources, create a formula that doesn't gather. And therefore, the Gaza Strip, according to our estimation, will stay unstable in the course of time. The difficulties that was creating after the disengagement for the terror to infiltrate into Israel forced the terror organization to use bypassing terror methods. This is the rocketry, the tunnels under the ground, try to overlap through the sea, and what we call the U-route, or in Hebrew the Chet, which is the formula of the letter, that means that they go from Sinai, from Gaza Strip to Sinai, from Sinai back to the Negev, as it happened a few weeks ago in Elat. Sinai Desert is big; it's bigger, it's three times bigger than Israel, and it allow global terror organization and the Palestinian terror organization to carry out attacks from its territory, and this is a very difficult area to control. And we understand the situation since we have been there for many years. The fifth point here, the cooperation between Hamas, Iran, Hezbollah, and others, and the other global terror organization, create base for knowledge, high motivation, and operation that help the Hamas. I would like to explain this point with a few more words. There is a high motivation to hit Israel in the Gaza Strip. There is a lot of experience, military experience, operational experience in Gaza Strip. And the contact with the world, especially with Iran, create the help of the knowledge, the know-how, and the ammunition and the explosive that are being brought from abroad. Together, this combination of motivation and knowledge and ammunition create a very problematic situation for all the sides that are involved in the situation, because some of these efforts are, or most of them are pointing against Israel, but some of them are pointing against Egypt, as it happened on the map that I showed you a few minutes ago. We have to recognize that Hamas is the dominant organization that control Gaza Strip, even if we don't like this situation. This is the situation right now, and the strength of the Hamas is increasing ever since they won the elections in, I think, January 06. And they are getting stronger. And this, of course, have ups and downs, but basically the gradient is moving forward. What is the up-to-date picture in the Gaza Strip? As I said, Hamas won the election. Hamas is strengthening. There is a gradual weakening of Fatah. There is a struggle, a violent struggle between Hamas and Fatah. All the various factions in Gaza Strip are gathering ammunition, knowledge, infrastructure of terror. Rocket launching is a daily issue. Even now, the average is 50 to 60 rockets per month, which means almost two per day. Terror attacks along the security fence continue, and the organization put great efforts in infiltrating suicide terrorists into Israel. And this is especially done by the Islamic Jihad, by the
resistance committees
and others. The Hamas is not activate right now, and I'll explain it, but let me put it this way. The Hamas is working from taking the terror operation from the shelf to the draw, to be ready, okay? And being on alert within 5 minutes, they can create a huge explosive under, let's say, an Israeli settlement or Israeli hold. I like to remind few facts about the area. The population in Gaza Strip is 1.25 million, plus minus, and the birth rate has decreased a little bit, but the mortality decreased because of the help of Israeli society, Israeli health system, and it's approached the rates of Israel almost. That means that let me put it this way. Most of the, as it's shown in, on the point three, most of the people in Gaza Strip are under the age of 20. And I am talking about 60%. The average income per capita in Gaza Strip is about $800 a month, a year. That means that is 5% of what happened in Israel, which is about 17 or 18,000 a year. And this by itself is create unstable situation, not talking about all the other issues. The economic state, as I said, is a bad one, and there is an uncertain civilian infrastructure. I put it in this diagram, and this port is Gaza Strip, and what hit the Gaza Strip is what you show in the flames underneath the ideology, demography, and the economy. The demography is part of the life of the Palestinian. The economy is something that the world can help with. And the ideology is the Palestinian choose. They choose to go after the Hamas, and this is something that is part of the problem. As a valve, I put three things on top. First of all, is a political horizon. It's not in under my wings. This is something the government deal with. The economical situation means that if you want to change this equation I was talking about, you need to do something in the economical side, and I think that there is enough money in the world, and especially in the Arabic world, to help the Palestinian if they want to do it. And there is a half a valve is the coordination between us and the Palestinian, and this just helped to, let's say, to transfer or to traverse the problem from one side to the other in case of emergency. But as you see in the on the left-hand side, the area population and resources of Gaza Strip create impossible equation right now, and therefore we think that Gaza Strip will stay unstable in the future. We left, as you know, we left Gaza Strip almost 2 years ago, and we left them the gas, we left them the greenhouses, we left them the fields, we left them the option to take another route. Basically, they choose the terror route. They a few months afterwards, they choose, they elect for the Hamas. And even before, and of course after that, they take Israel. They don't recognize in Israel. They don't recognize in the agreement we side with the Palestinians in Oslo and afterwards. And this is the situation. On the operational level, as I described before, Gaza Strip is kind of a closed area. Therefore, they try different methods. First of all, they launch rockets towards Ashkelon, Sderot, and other places. Second, they try to bypass through the ground and the underground infiltration. We have many tunnels that are digging even right now, and we don't know exactly, and I'm talking about Israel and other nations, most of the nations, we don't know how to detect a tunnel that its depth is 20 meters under the ground, that they are digging. Some of them have the length of a few hundred, and some of them more than that, more than 1 kilometer. And we suffer a lot from those tunnels. And this is one of the methods they use. Of course, trying to infiltrate into Israel through the fence. Right now, they don't succeed, and we are doing our best to keep the situation as it is. They take the forces on the fence that guard the fence in order to avoid terrorism into Israel. And of course, what I was talking before, taking from the sea, we have the data, we have the bad experience that happened in the north and also in the south. And of course, the U route that they are using, either short U just to pass the to pass the fence, or something longer that can use all the 200 kilometers that we have as a common border between Sinai Desert and Israel. What is the priority of the Hamas? And this is something that we have to understand. They declare, they announce it, and we cannot put it to the side. First of all is the ideology. This is the basic. Then the strengthening, and this means the internal, the military level, the foreign affairs, the economical affairs, the civilian. They try to be stronger as a political party than they was in the past, and so far they succeed. Then is the government, and afterwards, or the final, is using the terror. What I'm trying to say, and that this is the preference in case that they have to give up something. They will never give up the ideology. They may give up the using the terror as they do now when we have ceasefire with them. If it's a question of compromise, then can compromise on about the government, but they will hold themselves in a position which is strong enough as a military power, as a political power, in order to take back the government. And if you understand these levels and these priorities, you understand how they think, and it helps us to understand why cutting the terror by a ceasefire doesn't create a solution for the situation. It creates a solution just for temporary situation. As I said, this is not anymore one or two terrorists moving with the AK-47 Kalashnikov from one side to the other and shooting. This is a system. And as you see, they have four different brigades according to the zones in Gaza Strip. The north one, the Gaza Brigade, the Central Refugee Camps Brigade, and the Southern Brigade. Each of them have a commander. Under them, they have, for example, I took the refugee camps in the center. They have battalions. Each one of these battalions have a commander. Under them, companies and platoons and special forces dealing with the professional thing like observation, sniping, infantry, explosive, anti-tanks, and you name it. Everything is well organized. And this is, in a way, more similar to anti-tank commander division than to a terror organization. This is a system. And the know-how is brought by the Palestinian from abroad, most likely from Iran, but also from Syria and the Hezbollah. And everything is working according to a plan. It's not working as somebody in the area decide to do something and create his own ambitions. This is a system under leadership directed to a goal. I put here a few examples, what we call the strengthening pillars of the military plan of the Hamas. And the target is to establishing a military force in Gaza Strip, and it's on the way. And as you see in these pillars, they have everything. They have the doctrine, the structure, the training, the weaponry, the manpower, and the R&D. Under each of these, they have something very order and a plan to carry it out. And you can ask afterwards about the different points in these pillars. But let's talk about, for example, about the training. They sending activists to Syria, to Lebanon, to Iran. It's easy to move free of ammunition and weapons from Gaza Strip to Egypt. From Egypt, they took the plan to Syria. From Syria, they moved to Lebanon or to Iran or to other places. They train. And the opposite, people from Iran come, inspect the situation in the area, give them the proper training and coaching, examine them, and see if they hit the targets that they gave them. And this is, of course, just an example about how you build military force. And as I said, they have the motivation and they have the hate against Israel and the military experience. And from outside, they get the know-how about more modern systems and methods. This is a sum of the attacks against Israel since the disengagement. It's more than 2,000 attacks of rockets, most of them Qassam rockets. Almost 300 attacks of explosives. Some of them are stronger than we had in Lebanon during the 80s and the 90s. The anti-tank rockets and the counter-shooting is just from defense. It's not including the operation that the IDF was carrying out in Gaza Strip, because this is number of thousands. So this is just to give you the proportion, and this is the Palestinian and the terror answer to the Israeli disengagement that say, listen, you are responsible for your future in the coming years. You have to decide whether you want peace or you want to fight us. and this is the answer, and you can judge by yourself what is the answer. For the finalization, I would say we are acting and behaving and thinking how to bring a stable situation and a peace situation. This is the basic thing. The situation that was forced by the Palestinian, therefore Israel is doing anything possible to defend itself. And as you know, we are experienced people. We learned for 2,000 years what is the option if you don't have a military force to defend yourself. Right now, we have the capability and the right to defend ourselves by ourselves in our country. And that's what we are doing, and I think we are trying to do it very precisely, not by using all the force we can. And as you know, the Palestinian doesn't recognize any agreement and any decision that was taken by them and Israel and was supported by the international community, including the quartet.
Thank you very much, General Gallant. We have time for questions. What I'm going to ask everybody to do is to identify themselves for the record, even if you know that I know you. Before we get started with the questions, I want to take the liberty of, as chairman, to ask the first question.
I'm sure
you're seeing reports, certainly in the press and elsewhere, about some of the methods used by the insurgency forces in Iraq against coalition forces, because this has become an issue of tremendous interest in the United States and Great Britain. With the Western coalition forces in Iraq about the kind of weaponry or methods of military operations being used against coalition forces in Iraq to what you're seeing as the trend line in Gaza. In particular, the use of roadside bombs that can be used to penetrate armor, or the use of special mortars. These are two types of devices that the U.S. Department of Defense has emphasized in its briefings to reporters in Washington and in Baghdad.
I think you are hitting a major point. The source of most of the knowledge of creating and developing mines, explosives, anti-tank missiles, and other things is Iran. And its affect the situation in Iraq, in Lebanon, and in Gaza Strip, and they're trying to do it in other places. I would say that this is a major change in the situation in the Middle East, that the Iranians are using whatever they can in order to attack the West, including the moderate Muslim countries, in order to achieve their goals. And this, of course, put Israel and the United States in one side, no matter if it's in Iraq or in Gaza Strip. And the methods are similar. The internet allow people to change ideas, systems, plans in seconds. And this is not the situation we faced in Gaza Strip a few years ago, because we understand that the Palestinian from Gaza Strip can find himself meeting in Damascus or in Tehran with a terrorist, no matter if it's Al-Qaeda or some of the Shia groups in Iraq, and they meet together, they change ideas, they share knowledge, and they are working right now to the same target. That doesn't mean that the Palestinians and the Iranians, especially the Hamas and the Iranians, are identified. They are not the same, and they have major problems between themselves. But right now, they have a common idea and common goal, which means that they want to push Israel from the area and the Americans from Iraq, and all the rest is well known.
And I will open up to questions, please.
My name is Steve Rodin with Middle East Newsline. I have two questions. With your permission, one of the slides that you showed talked about a two-way route between Gaza and the Sinai. And I would like to know, what does this mean for Palestinian infrastructure, particularly jihad infrastructure in Sinai? The Egyptians did capture several people over the last month or so, saying there were jihad people who were involved in terror attacks in Sinai. My second question is, what are you doing regarding the border fence and the Masua 100 system, which is supposed to protect Gaza, Israel, and not allow what happened a month ago when the Palestinians took off part of the fence from the, the Gaza fence, and they were not stopped or detected? Thank you.
Well, you ask two questions. One is very strategic and one is very tactical. Let me start with the strategic one. I think that the Egyptians have a major interest to block terror in Sinai Desert and in Israel. We cooperate with them, and the cooperation during the last year is improving. And I think we see the problem in the same eyes. And that doesn't mean that we have 100% of succeed. This is a fact of life. As to the second thing, the Masua system is only one tool, and we have many tools, different tools, and we have to use them smartly in order to achieve our goals. And the problem with fighting terrorism is that not like in the regular war, when you use when the more power you use is better, the situation when you are fighting terror that have the cover and I would say the camouflage of civilians, is that you have to be very accurate, very precise, try to hit only the terrorists, and not using everything you have, because there are 99% or 95% of people who are uninvolved, and we don't want to hit them, first of all, because this is our law and our moral system, and second, because we understand that this doesn't affect our interest in the proper way.
Ed Rosenthal from Dutch television. As if I listened well, you didn't mention the kidnapped soldier, Noam Shalit, Gilad Shalit. Does Israel actually know where he is? Is he in the Gaza Strip, and where he is in the Gaza Strip? And why did Israel not try till now to liberate him, if Israel does know?
We think that Noam Shalit is in Gaza Strip. We think that we know that Hamas is holding him and responsible for him. And as far as we understand, he is alive in good situation. And that doesn't mean that we know where he is. And I think that we have to understand that the situation is changed during the last years, and the methods that the Hamas learned from Hezbollah and others are not just connecting to how to fight and all, but also to how to kidnap and how to negotiate. So the situation is a problematic one, and hopefully we'll find a solution. We are obliged to bring Gilad Shalit this way or another back to Israel.
General Gallant, there's been some talk about some possible military response from Israel in Gaza if the situation continues to get more serious. What from a military point of view is your assessment about the types of threats that the IDF sees as creating that type of seriousness on the ground? And what are the assessments about the elements that go into some sort of possible military response if at some point it becomes necessary?
First of all, I think the Hamas understand that Israel have many advantages in the military side. Most of them connected to technology, determination, understanding of the situation, the fighting under night conditions, and so forth, so on. And therefore, they are trying, with the help of the Iranians and others, I would say that the Hamas, in a way, in the military side, is an Iranian proxy. They are trying to close these gaps. And as Doi asked before, one of the major things is how to use explosives that can penetrate our armor, tanks, and vehicles. And of course, using missiles and other things. And let me put it this way. We have a military solution if it is needed. That doesn't mean that will be our recommendation and or that we'll go all out. That means that the government have the option to decide what is the proper way to use in case of a successful terror acts in Palestinian eyes. And as I said before, the problem that hit a lot a few weeks ago and create three innocent casualties could have been create 30 or 50 innocent casualties. And this is, by results, a whole different situation.
Pinchas Inbarit, ACPA. There were reports published about half a year ago about Israeli intention to take again buffer zones in Gaza in the north and in the middle, but nothing happened. Can you tell us exactly if there is any doctrine about coming back to Gaza, not to the whole of Gaza, but to take parts of Gaza necessary to defend Israeli cities and towns?
In order to defend the Israeli area, you can use more than one system. As a military, you always want to have maximum freedom by using all the methods and systems that you have, all the tools. That doesn't mean that all everything that the army is asking for, the government can accept. And we are working, and I'm proud that we are working as a military under a civilian government. I think it's good to be in a country where civilians give orders to generals and not the opposite. And in Israel, we are taking orders from the government, and the government is what the Israeli people elected for, and we'll do exactly what we are obliged to do, and we show the whole perspective, the advantages, the disadvantages, and explain the situation. The government decide, give us, of course, a space to work, and in this space, we are trying to do our best, and it is not always the maximum, but we try to bring the optimum.
Christoph Schult from the German weekly Der Spiegel. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the Egyptian-Israeli border? Because when you travel along the border and probably compare it with the border to Jordan, you are surprised how weakly guarded it is and how rusty and small the fence there is compared to other borders, neighboring borders with Israel. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the problems that is created by that fact and whether that will be changed, that border regime?
First of all, let's put the strategic situation as it is. We have a peace agreement, a stable peace agreement with the Egyptian. We think it's essential for Israel and for the Egyptian, and we are working together to find solution to tactical problems, including the infiltration from Sinai Desert to Israel that didn't start today and not 10 years ago. It was here when the British rule here and when the Turks rule here. And this is the way that some of the Bedouins are making lives. What happened during the last years is that these routes that usually were for smuggling drugs and other goods are using now by the terror. And we are trying to find a way how to block it. And I think that sooner or later we'll create some kind of an obstacle, physical obstacle on the border, something that wasn't necessary during the last years, but it is necessary now. And according to the national preference, we'll put it on the right level. It will take a few years, and eventually we'll create it. And I think good fence makes good neighbors, and we want the Egyptian to be our good neighbors, and so far it's working.
Mark Sievers, American Embassy in Tel Aviv. General, how would you assess the development of the Fatah security forces in Gaza over the last few months, and what do you see of the prospect of their being able to cope with Hamas if it comes to a confrontation in the next year or so?
I think that, first of all, there are more Fatah armed people than Hamas armed people in Gaza Strip. But that doesn't mean, and I'm that's include, of course, the Palestinian organization, security organization, or at least so-called security organization. And I think that doesn't mean that when they will have to fight Hamas, the situation will be that they will take over, because the problem is not a problem of the amount of explosives or ammunition. The problem is whether they are determined, they believe in what they are doing, and they are willing to sacrifice everything, including their lives, in order to achieve their goal. And right now, the determination, the organization, the well organization, is in the Hamas side and not in the Fatah side. Therefore, it is not up to the West, including the Americans and the Israelis, to decide what will be the result of such a struggle, because it is we have to deal with something which is deeper than that and connected to what they have in their minds and in their beliefs. And if they will decide that they want to take over and to succeed, they will succeed. But you cannot create it artificially in the Fatah side. So this is the problem, and this, of course, reflect my opinion about a common struggle between them, if it will come in the near future. I don't know about the far future.
Lenny Ben-David from JCPA. You referred to the ceasefire with Hamas. My question relates to that. Is there a formal ceasefire? Do we know what the conditions are on both sides? What constitutes violations? And is there a fear that if there is a breakdown of the ceasefire, we will soon see see Hamas using weapons such as Katyushas or shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles?
I think that there is a ceasefire. This is not a formal ceasefire between Israel and the Hamas because we have no connection with the Hamas. This is an understanding between the leaders of both sides, the Israeli and the Israeli prime minister and the Palestinian president. And there is, I would say, the spirit of this idea that directed us what to do and what not to do. Sometime the area, the ground, have to give chance to what happened in upper levels and not the opposite. As I said before, the Hamas is using the time and they are looking at the situation as an opportunity to strengthen themselves and do whatever they can in order to build their power. That means that there is some kind of balance between what we are doing in the future or what we'll do in the future and what we are doing in the present. And this balance is that right now we prefer to give chance to this ceasefire in the present, but we have to prepare ourselves for a war situation in the future, and that's what we are doing.
Scott, in the back.
I'm Scott Wilson from the Washington Post. General, you said that you have evidence that Iranians are coming to inspect the situation in Gaza. Yuval Diskin told us 2 days ago that Israel had no intelligence of Iranians in Gaza. Could you clarify that for me, please? And also, just more along the lines of Hamas's military buildup, what is their short and long-term intent with this military? Is it to use against Fatah? Is it some kind of an invasion force? Is it to be used only against Israel when it comes into Gaza? What is its motivation for doing this?
First of all, the Iranians don't have to come by themselves in order to see what is the situation. If there is a Palestinian who is connected to the Hezbollah and working for Iran and is moving to the Iranian side, learning methods, getting orders, and moving then to the Palestinian side, that's for me good enough to explain the situation I was talking about, and I don't want to get into any deeper details. And whatever Yuval Diskin is saying is for me the truth, and but I think the explanation give you the idea of what is the situation. We don't need Iranian generals as the PLO faked after their take on the university, but if they have some proxies who are well connected to Hezbollah and to Iran, they have the methods and the system and the influence and the knowledge. So this is for the first question. And the second question, let's look at this in this way. You don't need tons of explosive. They import 30 tons of explosive during the last year into Gaza Strip. This is not something to be used against the Fatah. This is something that is to use or to create a different equation with Israel, at least in the southern side, so they will be able to attack Israel and to deter us from acting back by using, for example, armor brigades or armor division entering the area, because they think we'll be deterred by their capabilities. We have different ideas, and I think we will know how to handle this situation if it will happen. But for the basic question, the answer is everything they are preparing is against Israel and not against the Fatah. Of course, it serves them in order to create better situation between the Hamas and the Fatah, but this is only a side effect.
Michael.
Michael Woodlansky, Hebrew University and Front Page Magazine. On January 10th or 11th, Mahmoud Abbas gave a speech in which he used the phrase, I watched it in Arabic, let our rifles, all our rifles, be turned against the occupation. It wasn't widely translated in Israel or the United States, and I'd like to ask you, again, following the question by the American embassy official, what is the role of Fatah in the level of attacks against Israel, first of all? Perhaps over a three-year period, has it changed? Secondly, what is the role of Iran and Hezbollah influence on Fatah? And is Mahmoud Abbas doing anything seriously to try to counter it?
First of all, it's not to my level to criticize leaders of countries, including the leader of the Palestinian state. But as to the Fatah, let me put it this way. They don't like us, and they have their own struggle and their own goals, and they want to achieve them. But this is some kind of a reasonable partner that you can solve or maybe solve the situation with them. And we are trying to do our best in order to do so. And that doesn't mean that they don't have opposite opinions about how to solve the problem. I mean, opposite to our opinions. As to the penetrating of the Iranians into the Fatah, let me put it this way: the Al-Aqsa Brigade that related, at least by the symbol, to the Fatah, is already an Iranian organization, similar to the Jihad, Islamic Jihad, and this is partly because the Iranian understand that it easy to connect with them, although they are from the Sunni branch, they are not very radical Muslims comparing to the Hamas, and this is a place where money can create the difference. And therefore, it started in Judah and Samaria 5 or 6 years ago, that they buy both the organization, buy money, and activate them against Israel according to Iranians' ideas. That's, of course, have to worry not just Israel, but also all the, I would say, all the Western world that have to look at this problem and to understand what is the Iranian threat is. And as I said before, using those Palestinian organizations tactically against Israel, what they are doing, either because of the internal and local interest or because of the Iranian interest is only one side of the problem. The other side of the problem is that those organizations are in good connection with global organization, terror organization, and soon we'll see them working against Western interest all over the world. And this this squad is trying to achieve its goals. And it's easier to buy the Palestinian not religious people than to find yourself in the religious side. And that's what the Iranians started with. I cannot give you the precise number, but this is not something that is you can neglect. It's tens of percent, either 20. I cannot say exactly because it depends very much on the involvement of the Hamas during the situation and what is the total. The total amount, but there are not some side effect. This is a major issue.
I want to thank General Gilad for a fascinating look at the security situation in Israel south in the Gaza Strip, and also setting it in a regional context. Some of those maps had, I would say, enormous, what's the word we use in newspaper world,
resonance.
Not just resonance, but actually interesting information I'd never seen before. So I think that we were all learned a great deal from your speech, from your explanations. I want to just tell everybody that on Monday, I won't be here, but Minister Avi Dichter will be briefing the ICA group, and the invitations for the exact timing of that presentation will be coming shortly, as usual. So again, thank you, General Gallant, and looking forward to having you here again on Monday next week.
Thank you.